Many of the in-person events we look forward to every year in Portland were canceled last year or went online due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Fortunately, we have a very effective vaccine now and hope for the future of live events. Several of my favorites, maybe yours too, are returning this month, two of them on the very same day, Saturday, November 13th. We previewed the first, the annual Portland Book Festival, with festival director Amanda Bullock last week. On today's In-Depth, we welcome David Hattner, musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic, to talk about PYP's opening concert. The Portland Youth Philharmonic is the oldest continuously operating youth orchestra in the country. Now in their 98th year, PYP will be performing their season premiere the evening of November 13th at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland, a triumphant return to the stage after going virtual all of last season. David's been with us to preview PYP's concerts in previous years, and we're fortunate to have him back with us again today. David Hattner, welcome.
Thanks, Ken. It's great to be here.
Now, David, we're doing this interview via Zoom, which has become somewhat of a formality during the pandemic. But I remember you were my last in-person guest at the KBOO Studios March 2020, just before everything shut down. As mentioned in the intro, PYP went virtual last season. So right after that interview, live streaming the performances. Can you tell us how you and the musicians adapted to the virtual shows and maybe despite the challenges, if there were any valuable lessons learned, any silver linings?
The silver lining was that we decided to work with composers to create repertoire for the musicians to study during the shutdown, where the musicians would only be able to participate in the Portland Youth Philharmonic from their homes as individuals, and we wouldn't have any group performances that took place. We got together as an organization and tossed around all the different ideas we had for continuing the education of our musicians. And the best one was they're going to have to play from home and make recordings. And then those recordings will be compiled into a composite. You know, everyone has seen these, you know, various little boxes on the screen. And we thought it would be not particularly satisfying to play the regular repertoire that we normally do that way, because there are already performances of that music available in the traditional way that would be impossible to better that way. So what is the next options like? Well, we've always wanted to create newer repertoire for the students to play and also include voices that have struggled to be heard in American classical music concert halls. So we decided to do all of that. And we commissioned 31 pieces last season, and we gave the world premieres of all of them during the course of the year. And that includes the Philharmonic Orchestra and our training ensembles as well. So for this concert, because when I was planning this performance in the spring, we still weren't sure how many musicians we would have on stage at once, I decided to have a half of the program just for the winds of the orchestra and half just for the strings. And we would take classics of those repertoires, the orchestra winds and strings, and play them alongside the new pieces we had commissioned for those groups. So that was the silver lining. There were, of course, frustrations and challenges adapting to the technology, but now those are a part of the we can call those funny memories now. They're not bothering us currently because we're seeing our musicians in person.
The program features those two pieces by well-known composers, which you mentioned. We've got Igor Stravinsky's Symphonies of Wind Instruments, Ralph Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis. And that commissioning, I looked up, it's you called it the Youth Concert Commissioning Initiative.
Right, Youth Orchestra Commissioning Initiative. So we were sharing also those pieces with other youth orchestras.
Now, how did you go about selecting the composers for that commissioning initiative?
That fell to me to make contact. And so I talked to our conducting staff and then who would you like to have write music? And each of the conductors had some suggestions. And then, of course, I wrote to all the composers I knew and asked them if they would either want to participate or did they have names involved. And of course, we particularly wanted to reach out to women and people of color, which we did in the overwhelming majority of the cases. So in the end, we started with a group to do our fall concert. And as those pieces started to come in, we kept reaching out until we had enough pieces for the whole season. But it was a lot of emailing and persuasion. But fortunately, most of them were really interested in doing it. We had very few people who said, I absolutely do not have time to do it, or what you're offering is too little for me to accept it. So we were lucky that we didn't have to ask 10 composers for everyone who said yes. There were only a handful in the whole group that simply were not able to participate. So we were very grateful. So the level of the music, the quality of it was very satisfying. We loved almost every single piece. And now that we're doing them in person, it's even better because the composers were given the challenge of writing it specifically with this technology in mind that the parts would be recorded separately and assembled and to consider the advantages and disadvantages in how to write the music to adapt to that. And they did that. And some of that has made assembling it very challenging when you do it actually in person. So that's been a wonderful challenge to work on.
Well, I never thought of that. That's interesting. Yeah, because you originally had it orchestrated for boxes on the screen,
right.
People in their individual spaces, and then putting that all together. And now they're all on the stage together playing as one.
That's right.
It's still a lot of work, 31 new works. You narrowed it down for this performance to 5 pieces. Nicole Buetti's Restless Winds, Rinaldo Moya's Nimbo Stratus, Gabriel Meneses' 4 Elephants, Tecsu Kim's Jump, and Alfonso Fuente Colon's Rhapsodia Urbana. Did you pick those 5 pieces out of the 31 because of the musicians you thought you would have on stage for the opening concert?
Some of that is correct. The first 3 that you mentioned are all written for the winds and brass, and in a couple of cases, some percussion and piano of the orchestra. So those were commissioned really with the Stravinsky Symphonies of Wind Instruments as an inspiration, because that wonderful 10-minute piece, it needs companions, so that if you program it, you have some pieces to play with it that are more contemporary. Now, as it turns out, 2021 is the 100th anniversary of the world premiere of the Symphonies of Wind Instruments. So we're kind of landed perfectly on that. So we'll play that piece surrounded by these 3 new pieces, which musically have nothing to do with the Stravinsky other than that they use the same instruments. And then the 2 that we chose for the string orchestra, they're really the antithesis of the Vaughan Williams Thomas Tallis Fantasia, which is a very free rhapsody with variations on this simple tune, and also is for multiple string orchestras. Tecsu's piece, the piece called Jump, was written actually for our conservatory orchestra strings. And he really utilized this concept of having lots of different things going on. The musicians play with a metronome, a click track, when they record. So when you assemble it, all these different things can fit together very nicely. But when you're actually in the same room, and there's basically 2 groups of people playing very disjointed rhythms that all fit together in a way, but are confusing to play against each other, it's a real challenge. So it's, although it was written for our younger players, it's actually a real challenge to assemble for our older players, even though the parts themselves are not difficult. And the Fuentes Colon, the Rhapsodia Urbana, that was a piece that it just keeps growing on me every time I conduct it. It was written in Puerto Rico during the hurricane, 4 years ago. And he was in a sort of rural part with his mother, and one of the neighbors kept blasting this very banal, popular tune over and over again. And for a composer, it's almost torturous to hear this very simple material just repeated and, got into his dreams. And so this piece, this little 4.5-minute piece, it exposes in its simplest form this tune. It couldn't be any simpler. And then it transforms it in so many different ways, and it becomes really hallucinogenic by the end of the piece. It's so strange. And then it closes nicely. But it's I just adore it. And I think the audiences will love all the pieces. They're so much fun. And they're also different from each other. But every composer has a real voice. And in these brief little pieces, they're just doing so much. And again, it's just much more satisfying to hear them played together by our students, our musicians, as an ensemble rather than as individuals. And then the editor has to piece it all together.
Now, at least one of the pieces, Nicole Buetti's Restless Winds, was a response to the quarantine last year. And that must have struck a chord, if you'll excuse the pun, with you and the orchestra, because you all were in the same situation. Well, we all were.
Yes, everybody all over the world was in the same situation. They're stuck looking at screens to communicate. And, you know, Nicole is one of the two local composers, Tetsu Kim being the other, and she'll be attending the concert to hear her piece in person for the first time. And it's just a lively, fun piece. It's almost a little scherzo, maybe even a little bit of an etude for the musicians. It has some uneven metering, not nearly to the extent that Stravinsky does, but it's a challenge in getting the wind players to have immediacy of response of the instrument. In other words, to get the instrument to make sound at the absolute instant you need it, because basically it's a lot of very short, perky notes. And if they don't speak on time, then the ensemble doesn't hold together. So when you're playing absolutely with a metronome, it's easy to do that. But in rehearsals, just getting them to really be aware that they must produce sound, not on their timetable, but on everybody else's. So that's been coming along nicely. That's the opener of our concert. It's a fun, perky piece, and it sets up the Stravinsky work very well.
Another amazing program, which you're known for. I mean, every single concert we've talked about has mixed the old and the new, some well-known voices, composers with those who are up and coming or lesser known. I want to talk about the logistics themselves. PYP is a member of the Portland Performing Arts Vaccine Coalition. There's over 60 music and theater companies as members. What are the health requirements for admission to the concert, the live in-person event?
I'm glad you asked. So bring your vaccine card or a very recent negative test. I believe it's from the last 2 or possibly 3 days. The details are on our website, portlandyouthphil.com.
Yeah, I think it was three days. 72 hours.
Right. So, of course, it's best to be vaccinated. Our organizational policy for our musicians participating is to be fully vaccinated. Our Philharmonic Orchestra that'll be playing will be. And for the youngest musicians in our program, now that the vaccine has been approved, they're required to begin getting it, so that by the time we have our concert at Christmas in December, even our youngest musicians should be fully vaccinated by then. So I'm very proud of PYP for taking a strong stand on the vaccine. And also last year, we shut down a week before the state required us to, because we had the concert on the 6th or 7th of March. And then the shutdown came around the 13th, something like that. But we already stopped rehearsing.
Somewhere in the middle of the month, I remember that.
Yes, it was. We were lucky to be able to get that concert in.
Now, for classical music fans who are still a little concerned about attending live events, the concert will also be live streamed?
That's right. One of the things we learned from our experience doing virtual concerts was that we have fans very far from Portland. In fact, in other countries, many of our musicians have grandparents who live overseas, and they're going to be super thrilled, unless they have to get up at 5 a.m. to see the orchestra perform live. So all the information about how to buy a ticket to our live stream will be on the website, again, portlandyouthphil.org. And it'll be a great way to keep up with the orchestra as it plays its concerts. But of course, there's nothing better than being in the hall. So bring your mask and your vaccine card. It's still the best classical music bargain in this town.
Oh, without a doubt. And before we go, David, I'd like to give a shout out to one constant of our conversations in the previous years, Josh Espinoza. He was the longtime marketing director at PYP. He recently left to join the folks at All Classical Radio in Portland. I know you and I will both miss him a lot, but fortunately, you lucked out with a new marketing communications director. I think she just started a few days ago, Alice Fern.
Yes, Alice began with us on Monday, so she's still seeing everything whiz by at 100 miles an hour.
So welcome, Alex. And David, again, many, many thanks for joining us today. It's always a joy to talk with you, and it's going to be a joy to see PYP back before live audiences again. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, I'm glad, Ken. It'll be great. Great to see you there. Bring your friends.
I'm bringing my wife.
Yeah.
My best friend.
Tell everyone you know, because we're excited to show off this year's orchestra. It's a very fine one. And it's been very hard work to get them up to speed, but we rehearsed with the winds and brass and the percussion last night, and I can see their pride in what they're accomplishing. And that's one thing I've missed very, very much about being with them.
We've been talking with David Hattner, musical director of the Portland Youth Philharmonic. PYP will be performing the opening concert of their 98th season on Saturday, November 13th at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland. The performance starts at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets at PortlandYouthPhil.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOOS News In Depth.